Hello and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life behind the scenes of a YouTube creator and landowner, which is our exciting thing at the moment. It is the 18th of April 2026 and it's 8 o'clock as I record this in the morning. The sun is shining. It looks like a nice day. We are off to Hope, Sussex this morning to give a talk on the land and Biggleswick book and hopefully sell a few books at an event this afternoon at 2 o'clock. If you happen to listen to this, I think there probably is room for you to turn up if you so wish. I can't remember the ticket price, but there's cups of tea and cake, which is all part of it, and you get the opportunity to buy a book. So if you want to come, do so. If you can't, don't forget the book is available directly from me, so email me, richard@vobes.com, and I will sell you a book, sign it, and put a personal message inside. We will be trucking up there, a little later this morning for this afternoon, from 2 till 4. I've just been working on the running order of our presentation. Hopefully it will be good. Both Julia and I are doing it. So that would be nice, talking about life on the land the first 6 months, which would be lovely. And it's the first time we will be sort of doing a public talk about living on the land in the first 6 months. And our trials and tribulations, our projects and plans for the future and all those sort of things. Of course, you may have been watching the English Couple YouTube channel, and that has been demonstrating some of it. And of course, we can talk in a lot more detail and have the audience ask us questions, which will be good. Because they'll bring a completely different perspective and put us on the spot. And as we've say in the videos, we are novices at this, but we have enthusiasm and a joy for the countryside and the old way of doing things. So we hope people will enjoy it. Yesterday we were up on the land doing a bit more construction stuff. Julia was planting out some peas and we discovered a frog, a very large frog, under the plastic, some of the black plastic. But fortunately, we have a pond. And whether the frog knew about the pond, Julia scooped him up, a great big bugger, and plopped him in it, and he immediately took to it and he swam around. It was lovely. It was a joy to see. Of course, you should have filmed it, but I dare say we'll discover more frogs, and in time with the pond, if it doesn't dry out, which is a particular worry of ours at the moment with all this dry weather and not enough rain collection mechanisms in place as yet, we would hope that if it doesn't dry out and we manage to get more water in it, we will see more aquatic life as the year progresses. Can't wait to see the dragonflies and other sort of wildlife and insects and things. And perhaps in due course, we may even get some fish. But we think we realise that we probably need another pond. Because we're on clay up there, there's a good foot and a bit, maybe a foot and a half of topsoil, depending on which part of the land you're on. And then it comes down to clay, and it's pretty good clay, and it's held the water for quite some time. But of course, we haven't helped it by stealing that water to use to water the plants. And as it's our only water source, it was a jolly good job that we built the pond when we did. Julia had, she sort of casually said quite early on, "Oh, I think we need a pond." And I dutifully started to dig. Well, we both did. But we got the thing done and we kept widening it. But of course, we're only using hand tools, so it's not terribly deep. Perhaps it could be a bit deeper, which would have been more advisable, I suppose, because we would have collected more water. But anyway, this is the whole thing that we're learning. We're learning about the lifestyle. And
here she goes.
Go on, cat.
Come on, Maisie. There we go. And plonk.
And plonk. It's going to remove the cat from my desk.
She's sunning herself on the windowsill.
Yes. And I don't blame her because the sun is shining. And it is very nice because we love the sunshine. But now we're concerned with the amount of it and not enough watering. I think somebody commented in one of our videos that they too are having problems, that it's quite parched in America or parts of America where they haven't had any rain. And I guess this is a continual problem for gardeners, isn't it? If you're growing whatever you're growing, flowers, plants, trees, or indeed food, there's that mixed balance between enough sunshine to get the photosynthesis working and plants growing, and then the balance of sufficient water. But anyway, we will see how it goes, and that will be wonderful. Tomorrow I'm away at an event, another event in which I'm emceeing. And it's an event with a lot of speakers, but they don't have very long to talk. And there's rather a lot of them. And I'm, from my experience of emceeing these events, speakers go on usually longer than their allotted time. And getting them to stop and appreciate that we are on a timetable is often difficult when they're in full flow. And I did have advised the organiser. I said, well, I don't think you've given them a very long, because by the time they get into the introduction of what it is they're talking about, they've got to come off. And so then they'll want to complete the information that they've got to pass on, quite rightly. But I, at the same time, quite rightly, will have to push them off the stage, not literally, and bring the next speaker on. Otherwise, the allotted time of the day will come and you'll overrun, and I think that's quite frustrating for both the viewers or the audience and indeed the owner of the hall or wherever it is who decides, well, you've got to come out at this time because a caretaker or whatever has got to come in and tidy up, or the organiser's got to put the chairs away and lock up and so forth. So, but this very often happens, that there are, I think, people are so desperate to get many speakers and subjects and topics out there that time just disappears. And sometimes you think, well, this perhaps should have been a two-day event or something. And then, of course, you've got questions and answers, and that's always very difficult, I think, because, unfortunately, people will think of a question, but they don't always know how to phrase that question. And often in order to get to the question, they sort of qualify the question, often with a lot of unnecessary explanation about why they're asking the question or their own personal situation. And whilst that's perhaps interesting, it also takes a lot of time. And if you haven't allotted enough time for questions and answers, you can find that actually you get one or two questions, you know, a smaller amount than you could do. And in the past, we have done it in a way that the questions are asked and put on pieces of paper so that the question can just be read out very quickly and a response can be given to that question, which actually works, I think, much better, because then the questioner has focused their attention on the question and the person reading out the question can see if it's long-winded or not, and can actually just hone in on the vital part rather than often a long, unnecessary explanation. So we will see how that goes. I quite enjoy doing the Master of Ceremonies, if I can say the word, Master of Ceremonies. Although, with the land now, of course, our time is so precious, especially this first year, to not only try and grow things and learn from that experience, but also get the infrastructure that one requires to do that. So it is a big challenge. Year two, hopefully, we will have gleaned a lot of information, worked out where we could improve things, but we won't necessarily have quite so much to build. That's not to say, of course, that we are building all over the land, and anything that we build is in fact not what you might call permanent, in that there's no concrete going in the ground. The only bit of concrete that's gone in the ground was to hold the gateposts up on the entrance. And of course that is essential and would be expected by anybody who might criticise what we're doing. They will see the value, of course, and it's what you do when you have gateposts. You need them concreted in to hold the gate, because the gate is heavy. Ours is a 12-foot gate, and it's opening and shut copious times, and it needs to be secure. So, but everything else is either built so it's slightly off the ground, or it's built with natural resources. We're trying not to buy in too much commercial products, seeing as we do have quite a bit of woodland. Well, we have quite a bit of wood within the small area that we call woodland, these spruce trees. And so therefore, we are very aware that we're custodians of the land and we don't want to ruin it. And that actually, when our time is over, or the land's time as a growing place is over, whether that's in 10 years' time or 100 years' time, whenever it is, the infrastructure that we put can be easily removed and the land goes back to being what it originally was. Although when we took it on, of course, it was a bit wild and overgrown, and nature just did what it did. So we tamed it. We've tamed it to a certain degree. We haven't tamed all of it. And actually, we don't really want to have all of it tamed. We don't want it to turn into a into what are they?
A pristine.
Yes, a pristine thing that just you know is there for show. It's not there for show. It's a working place. And of course, we're not just the only people on that land. There's the people, not people. There's the animals. The lives who live there, nature, and whether they're bugs and insects, or rodents and voles and mice and what have you, although that population could be greatly reduced to aid us growing, birds and pheasants and things, you know, it's their space too, and I think that one should have, man should have respect for his fellow animals and neighbours. Neighbours, not necessarily people in houses and what have you, but the neighbours are those that live there. Like the frog we were talking about. We're not there to get rid of all of those things. We're there to live symbiotically, if that's the right word, as best we can. And obviously they need food supply, as in nature does, and we need our food supply. So I think that's a sensible and fair way to deal with a piece of land. Other people, of course, will spend time building with concrete and bricks and those sort of things. And of course, on a big farm, you need big barns and you need much more enduring construction. But I don't think that we need to do that. And in fact, as much as possible, we're trying to follow more of the older routes and the natural routes and following nature as best we can, because I think nature is probably the best way of doing things, because it's been doing it for, well, forever. So, but of course, I'm sure that people listening to this, if you've seen what we are up to, will appreciate what we're doing. But part of that is, of course, learning what works and what doesn't. So it'll be fun to talk about that today, actually, at Hope Sussex. And then next week, we aim to be back on the land, of course. And all our time is really taken up with that. I mean, it is a commute at the moment. We now have a caravan on site, and you'll see that in the next episode, which I say on site. I don't like using that word, as it's a sort of a legal term, and the earth is not a legal entity. It is a natural entity. So we now have a caravan on the land, on the farm, which will enable us to stay, as we've always planned, 1, 2, 3 nights in a week, to reduce the cost of travelling and the stress of travelling and the time of travelling. Takes us an hour on a good run, and if we hit the traffic or roads are closed, which there seem to be copious amounts of roads closed and plastic cones potentially offering a work site going on where nothing is actually happening, and temporary traffic lights seem to be more permanent than temporary. There is certainly an area that we drive through on one of the routes that we go to, where in a small village that we have to go through, there is work going on, and it's been going on for 6 bloody months with these temporary lights, and it holds everything up. So the caravan is, it's only just really arrived last week, so we've spent one night in it just to give it a test to see how things go. But it was lovely waking up. Now, we laid out on a pallet a couple of scaffold boards for the early morning cup of tea, so that we could get up, and as the sun rises, we could sit there and enjoy our first cup of tea of the morning, or hot beverage, whatever, and get a little bit of vitamin D before we start work. And we stayed in the caravan with that in mind, and woke up, and it was raining. So we have yet to try the coffee station, or the tea station, or the drink station, the sun, whatever you want to call it. So that, you know, best laid plans and all of that, it's all good fun. But we will. And it was great to stay in the caravan. I mean, you wouldn't want to live in it permanently. I mean, one could do, but of course it's only a caravan, and I've got a lot of books and other personal belongings, which quite where you would put them, really. If you put my books in the caravan, there would be no space for anything else, and at the moment I'm loath to get rid of my library of books. But of course I can see the merit of living on the land, but if we could find a small house nearer the land, that would be a very good option, because when there's two of us and also Julia's children, a caravan isn't going to do it. Whereas a small house, at least then you can escape. Also, it's quite nice in some respects to come away. I'm actually quite looking forward to this weekend of events, just to have a break and if you're doing something all the time, you start to lose the appreciation for it. And sometimes you need to get away. And I guess that's why people have holidays, isn't it? Because they lose the appreciation of getting up in the morning and commuting to work and spending a long day sitting in front of screens doing work perhaps they don't really want to do. they lose that appreciation of putting themselves through hell in order to earn sufficient money to do the things they do want to do. I say that with my tongue in my cheek and a bit of irony going on. But it is heavenly. And one of the things I think that we very much share is that at the end of the day, when we're packing everything up, especially if it's a nice evening, you just think, I don't want to go home. I don't really want to go home. It's not so much being at home, because I do like my house, but it's not so much that. It's the packing up the van, driving home after a long, tiring day, and then getting in, and then rustling up some food, and those myriad of other jobs that you want to do at home, and perhaps that might be things like doing your emails or decorating a room or whatever it might be that you want to do, or some hobbies that you've got, or, you know, whatever it is. You haven't got the time because of that commute. We're in the spring now, of course, and then we'll have the summer, so we have longer evenings. And in many ways, that makes it even more wanting not to go home, because it is particularly lovely in the evening with the slow dying sun. And I suppose what one could do is just eat, have a barbecue, or sit outside and have the evening meal and then head home. But the caravan is going to be a joy, because we can break up the week in that way. And it's a delightful compromise. And of course, with the price of diesel at the moment escalating to nearly £2 a litre, it may well be £2 a litre in some parts of the country, it will save us some money, which at the moment is a one-way direction, as we are just spending time doing that and not doing what we were doing before. And even though we've got the YouTube channel, I mean, you know, YouTube has changed its algorithm. It always does that. And you find that you can make a little bit of money on YouTube. They change the algorithm and you've got to start again, really. It's not the best way of trying to earn a living. And of course, my main channel has been demonetized, so I earn nothing from it now. And I always think this is a strange irony, that they deem my content, even though now it's not what it was, they deem it as both misinformation, but their main excuse is that it is, what's the term, harmful content, they call it. So they can't monetize it. They won't allow it to be monetized. But the irony is that they're quite happy for harmful content, as they call it, to be on their platform. And I do find that very odd. I think that if they think you're making content that is harmful for people to watch, not only perhaps should you not be being able to earn money from it, but it shouldn't be there in the first place. That's not to say that I want them to not allow me to put the content up, because it's all changed now. I'm not so much talking about that. I'm reflecting on life more. It's more philosophical. Which I don't think is harmful at all. It's just an opinion on life, the universe and everything. But there you are. It is a strange platform. Anyway, so that's what we're up to. That's where we're going. Fortunately, the Naked Englishman is an area where one can talk about anything, because it sits on a rented server, I think somewhere in America, and it has its own private web address, and only those that know about it will go to it. It's not, whilst it is open to the public, of course, it's a very different thing. And I quite enjoy the fact that the Naked Englishman podcast does not have comments that people can comment. You know, it's a lot more of an effort for people to send an email if they wish to communicate, whereas comments on you, I would rather not have comments at all on YouTube. I would, you know, it's a bit like watching television in the old days, where you would sit and tune in to a program, watch it. You had your own personal views about that program, but you didn't have to write a comment or feel obliged to, or if you had negative comments, mostly people wouldn't bother to, they would just decide, well, I'm not going to watch that again. But YouTube is a strange thing that people who dislike you for whatever reason or are unable to write their criticisms in a pleasant way will turn into keyboard warriors. I think it all of social media has changed people's respect for one another in some ways, because they'll write these quite terse and antisocial comments, but they wouldn't say those things to your face. And you know, I know that people, of course, people are jealous of other people's successes or projects or doings. We all perhaps have an element of that, that we go, well, I wish I was doing that, or if I did it, I'd do it in a different way. But some people do feel obliged to put that over, often in a hateful way, or in a very unsympathetic way, even though perhaps they don't really mean it to come over that way. Text is a funny medium of communication, isn't it? Because it can be very easily misconstrued. I've sent texts to people in the past, all with good meaning, and they've been misinterpreted. And whereas when you talk to somebody face to face, you not only have the way it's spoken, the nuances of the of how something is spoken, but also the body language that goes with it. You say, "Oh yes, that person has said to me is meant as a joke. It's not meant as a nasty piece of criticism." And it's I think verbal face-to-face communication with body language is the best way for a human to communicate with one another, rather than usually in text. But anyway, we often do. Sorry, having a yawn here, stretch at the same time. Anyway, better go and get things ready for this event. So thank you for listening to this rambling, and I will catch up with you soon. Probably, I don't know about tomorrow. Won't get one done tomorrow because we're leaving early. Got to be somewhere at the crack of dawn. So anyway, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.